This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We are at a pivotal moment in American politics. For journalists like myself, there hasn't been an election this unpredictable or exciting or frightening in a very long time. For progressive activists, among whom I count myself, there hasn't been a major candidate of a major party who has reflected our values like Bernie Sanders has in a very long time. But despite how hard Sanders and his supporters have fought, the Democratic Party establishment and its Byzantine rules designed to be undemocratic seem to have won. The mainstream corporate media has aided that win. And already the barrage of demands to vote for the lesser evil of Clinton in order to stave off a Trump presidency has begun. It is a crucial moment to take the temperature of American democracy as a whole, not just electorally, but in terms of citizen engagement. Joining me to do that is Peter Bloom, a lecturer in the Department of People and Organizations at the Open University in the UK. He's published widely on issues of 21st century democracy, politics, and economics. His forthcoming book is called Authoritarian Capitalism in the Age of Globalization. And he just wrote an article published in Common Dreams entitled, If Sanders Has Lost, What Have the Democrats Won? Welcome to the program, Peter.
Thank you for having me.
So I think it's fair to at least operate on the assumption for the purposes of this conversation that Clinton will be the nominee. I know that many diehard Sanders supporters might disagree, but it looks like she's basically got enough momentum. And unless there's a huge exodus of superdelegates, which also seems unlikely, she will likely be the nominee. Is that a safe assumption, you think?
I mean, I think that would be a safe assumption. I think after the results yesterday, and if you look at, as the mainstream media always like to say, the math, that she looks as if she would be the nominee. Now, the contours of what that looks like, I feel, think is up for discussion about how much she's going to have to negotiate and give. But in terms of at least being the figurehead of saying, I am the nominee of the Democratic Party, I think she has won that battle.
And actually, let's focus on the media for a minute. How much of the media's role has sort of ended up being a self-fulfilling prophecy? Right from the start of this campaign, we were told Sanders is a fringe candidate, Clinton's going to be the nominee. Everybody just give up, Clinton's going to be the nominee. Trust us, she's the nominee. And of course, now she's the nominee. And I'm sure at some point somebody will do an analysis of exactly how much media coverage Clinton got compared to Sanders, positive versus negative. But do you feel that the media, in a way, really deeply influenced the way in which these primary elections have turned out, maybe not in terms of who is ultimately the nominee, but at least by what margin Clinton is the nominee?
I think so. I think that they've affected it, if I can, in several ways. I think on a very basic level, you're absolutely right. They've constructed a narrative from the very beginning that Bernie Sanders was a fringe candidate. They did have some kind of, I think, relationship with him as this kind of underdog candidate at some point, but it was always a notion that Clinton is an established candidate who looked like to be, if not just a front runner, but a very experienced candidate who had all the credentials and qualifications and judgment to be a very good Democratic nominee. I think on a more, if I can say, pernicious level, what the media has done has turned this into a set of narratives, which I think are quite dangerous. So they've really helped set the limits of what is possible and impossible within American Democratic politics. So it was very interesting to see the ways in which, just as Clinton evolved in many of her policy positions over a longer time, they had to evolve very quickly as well. So immediately when Sanders said something, which if you look at an international context is not a very radical statement, such as we need universal health care, we need free subsidized public education, that they were saying, well, that's quite impossible. That's a radical idea. That's an idea that is simply politically unfeasible. And the minute, though, that it seemed to be gaining popularity, you would see the ways in which they were trying to shift. But throughout the campaign, I think there was a means in which they established narratives of Bernie Sanders is saying things that are implausible, non-pragmatic, and politically impossible. And that always, I think, for many Americans, he would have been sympathetic to his candidacy and his ideas, created this notion that what Bernie Sanders was saying was quite idealistic at best and dangerously, as we said, non-pragmatic at worst. And what Senator Clinton was saying was something that really was similarly reform-minded, but could actually be achievable.
Right. I want to play a clip for you and our audience of Bernie Sanders speaking on Tuesday night. This was primary election night in California and a number of other states in Santa Monica, California. He essentially seemed to very strongly suggest that he was going to keep running. Here's Bernie Sanders.
When we began this campaign a little bit over a year ago, we were considered to be a fringe campaign. But over the last year, I think that has changed just a little bit. But you all know it is more than Bernie. It is all of us together. What this movement is about is millions of people from coast to coast standing up and looking around them and knowing that we can do much, much better as a nation. We are going to fight hard to win the primary in Washington, D.C. And then we take our fight for social, economic, racial, and environmental justice to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Bernie Sanders speaking Tuesday night in Santa Monica, California, vowing to take the fight for social equality and democracy to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to the Democratic National Convention this summer. And he also said in the clip that I played that this is more than just Bernie, sort of intimating that this political revolution that he wants to see is bigger than himself. So what happens now? What, first of all, actually, let's talk about what he has achieved, what he and his campaign and all the supporters have achieved. It seems to be a very strange thing that in American politics, the most popular candidate is not going to end up winning a nomination, because poll after poll has shown he is the most popular candidate. And what does that say about American democracy?
Well, I think that very straightforward, it says that we have a democracy that is at best merely a surface level for oligarchy. I mean, it's very clear that you have establishment politics. And when we say this, we don't just mean this in kind of rhetorical ways, but very serious mechanisms for ensuring that certain candidates can achieve victory and certain others can't. What I think Bernie Sanders has definitely achieved, though, is the fact that he's made it clear that the ideas he represents and the path that he would like to take is one that many Americans are open to and ready to go for. And even the Wall Street Journal, or I think Forbes said this today, I mean, this is the truth, is that Hillary Clinton has won a definite battle to become the Democratic nominee, but the Democratic Party has lost the war. I mean, they have an entire younger generation that has become radicalized, and even more importantly, are seeing things that have once thought to have been radical as not radical, as something that just should be. And this opens the space for a whole range of policies and ideas and forms of new empowerment that I think are right now just completely unthinkable within the current American system.
So at this point, what do you think the progressive movement, if you will, that Sanders' campaign seems to have captured, what do you think it can do? Because here's the downside of electoral politics, and there's so many downsides, but one of the biggest downsides is that lots of people pour their energy into elections thinking that that's the way to make change, because, you know, it's maybe easier to go stand in line, watch your favorite candidate, and then cast a ballot rather than working continuously as a political activist. And then when things like your favorite candidate not winning the nomination happen, you become completely disillusioned and you walk away thinking, what's the point after all? I'm just better off putting my head down and trying to make it in this life. And do our elections and our electoral political systems, are they designed to leave us totally and utterly defeated? And if so, how do we fight that?
Well, I think that there's several facets to this. One is, and you hear this all the time with Donald Trump, that this is not politics as reality TV show. But in fact, our democratic politics is very much in the same kind of emotional register as a reality TV show. We pick the candidate we like, and then we root for them and root for them and hope they win. But what actually I think Sanders has done is shown there's a different way to engage with politics. And that is the fact that through popular will, through continual communication, through continual pressure, you can actually change not always the faces, but actually the what they represent. So for instance, by actually really forcefully saying that we do not want a Wall Street-based economy, that actually started a shift in saying, well, even if Hillary Clinton wins the nomination, she's going to have to at least address this issue in more than just a situation of like, I won on The Bachelor, I get to be Democratic nominee and president now. I think there's another element to this, though, and it's one that you bring up very strongly, which is that we have an electoral system that is, in many ways, the only avenue most Americans have to experience democratic action. And most of their lives are lived in relative liberal authoritarianism, just in the sense that they go to work and a boss tells them what to do. There's very little democracy at the workplace. Most of their choices are matters of what they can afford, what they can pay for. They don't have a lot of situations in which they get together with their community and they make decisions. Or really a feeling that they can change huge things together or individually. And I think what this campaign has done is open the space for possibly creating alternative forms of democratic engagement. And the good news about that is that they do exist. And they're very vibrant. I mean, you have things like participatory democracy that is happening all over the world, including in some places in the United States. You have situations in which more and more people are able to get together through social media and really begin to shape what they think their community should look like, or what they think certain options and policies should look like. So I do think that you're beginning to see not just, if you will, an engagement with electoral democracy, but its limitations and therefore the need for a democratization of society. Going forward for a progressive movement, I think Bernie Sanders represents a very good, in most other contexts, he would be a centrist, but for the American context, he's a very good social democratic progressive candidate. And as you said at the beginning of the show, for progressives, I think he represents one of the only legitimate progressive candidates who has been able to attract mainstream appeal, at least in our lifetime. But going forward, I also think it's about what do we want? And it's not just about recapturing 20th century goals such as Social Security, such as better healthcare, such as more government intervention, but actually in the 21st century, how do we want to look at this? And I think what Bernie Sanders has done is, in addition to just the policies presented, is open up the space to say, we can talk about a whole range of things. Why do we work so much? Do we actually need to have a society that's based on labor? Can we have a post-work society? What would that look like? So all these things that previously I think were completely unthinkable, I think even if you don't always hear them in the mainstream media, have begun to circulate and have begun at least on a very basis to say that if democracy is about not just winning, but also the debate and discussion of ideas and possibility, to actually make things that previously were unthinkable now at least part of the discussion and maybe even possible.
So then that finally leads me to ask this question. Does it even really matter what Bernie Sanders himself does in the next few months? Because a lot of people are sort of looking to him as pointing the way forward. A lot of Green Party people have said, well, he's just going to go back Clinton because he said he would. Clinton herself made overtures to Sanders in her speech on Tuesday night, lauding him for, you know, creating a space for stronger conversations on income inequality, et cetera. And a lot of people are saying still Bernie or bust. Bernie Sanders supporters are refusing to participate in the election because they would rather vote for Jill Stein and risk Trump being president than ever vote for Clinton. And I fully sympathize with that position. But in the end, isn't it so much more important for us to think, for us as a progressive movement energized by the Sanders campaign, to think what we do next matters, not just at the polls, but beyond, rather than what Sanders himself as an individual does or decides to do?
Well, I would agree 100% with that. I think, and I've written something around this before, that it's very ironic that as inspiring as Sanders is that, you know, the left in many countries, including the UK, seems to be now reinvigorated by old white men. So, you know, I'm not sure that we need to look at Sanders, and I don't think he would like to be this, as some kind of savior figure. I think what Sanders does see is that there's an inside-outside game that needs to be played. So the fact that Sanders is able to get some serious progressive voices within the Democratic establishment is not something in which to simply jettison. However, it also shows the fact that the Democratic Party is not going to be the vehicle for the kind of progressive discussions and democratization of society in which we really would like. So in this sense, it is playing a variety of games. And that's why it's very interesting in terms of the American context, because America is so focused on a two-party system that it's all about unifying. What I think is more important is we don't need unity, but we certainly can have coalition. So I don't think it's mutually exclusive to say, well, you know, Hillary Clinton is an imperialist. She's someone who on foreign policy is perhaps not that different, if at all, from Donald Trump. And she is someone who has no progressive values in terms of what she's done in her past. However, that doesn't mean that we support the kind of racist, demagoguing, and very kind of authoritarian, explicit populism of Trump. So there's places in which I think that if we present this as coalition as opposed to unity, there's a ways in which we can move forward so that we can involve ourselves in compromise without being compromised.
Well, I'm not sure how one would navigate such a compromise, because a vote for Hillary, a vote against Trump doesn't have to be a vote for Hillary Clinton. There are other options, and some people might choose to stay behind and not vote at all, and instead, hopefully, devote their lives to social change outside of the electoral political system. But yeah, I mean, it certainly remains to be seen what happens, not just between now and November, but beyond that. Any last thoughts, Peter?
Well, one thing I would say and that I would take heart with is the fact that, as we mentioned, that we sometimes can become very focused on the battles. And I think that's because as a society, we are very voyeuristic, as you kind of mentioned before, and we get very invested in these candidates. But it really is the larger war. And this larger war is the war of ideas, and it's the war of positions, and it's the war of progress. And on that level, what Bernie Sanders has achieved and the possibilities he's opened for American society is incredible. And I think coming up from slightly an outside position, I think the world is watching, and I think the world is excited. For the first time in a long time, American politics seems to be an exciting place, a place in which real change can happen. And so I wouldn't look at this as a point of disappointment. I would look at this as a point of saying, wow, in Kentucky, someone who's a democratic socialist got 200,000 votes, and the media's focus was surprised that he didn't win. That's a huge achievement. And that's a point in which we build as a foundation to say, we've already won. We just have to continue this fight. And we just have to continue saying that whoever gets the grand prize, at the end of the day, they're gonna have to play in our world, not us playing in their world.
Well, that's a perfect note to end on. Peter, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Peter Bloom is a lecturer in the Department of People and Organizations at the Open University in the UK. He's published widely on issues of 21st century democracy, politics, and economics. He has a forthcoming book called Authoritarian Capitalism in the Age of Globalization. We'll post a link to his new article in Common Dreams entitled, If Sanders Has Lost, What Have the Democrats Won? This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.